Welcome, you're listening to the season 5 of the Young Changemakers podcast. This is a Global Changemakers production. If you would like to know more about the programs and the resources available for you, go check global-changemakers.net. Enjoy the episode.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Young Changemakers podcast. Today we will speak about refugee meaningful participation and inclusion with Daniel Gamboa Salazar, who has had a personal experience with this as a refugee and as a changemaker. Thank you so much for being here today, Daniel.
Kia ora, hello and hola from New Zealand. What a pleasure to be here today in this podcast. So good to see you, Megan. It's been such a long time, and I'm really excited to share with you all my refugee journey and also to talk about refugee meaningful participation. I'm so excited about this topic. So thank you, everyone who's listening to us right now.
Thank you, Daniel. No, the pleasure is all mine. For everyone in the audience that might not be familiar with this, I personally know Daniel I've met him for a long time. I actually met him at the Global Youth Summit of Global Changemakers that happened in 2017. And that's the first time that I heard his story, that I heard about his activism. So I'm very happy to reconnect through this podcast and to share what he has been up to. But I think it would be better if you share with the audience, Daniel, before we start with your story and many other topics related to meaningful participation of refugees. Could you please tell us a little bit about yourself and what have you been up to?
Yes, well, how wonderful to be here today. I owe so much to the Global Changemakers, as the journey throughout the summit really shaped me to be who I am and gave me those tools to amplify my voice. And this is why I'm here today. So thank you to you, and thank you to the Global Changemakers team as well. And if you don't know about Global Changemakers, you should be checking them out because they have amazing resources to build your leadership capacity and capability. So check them out. Well, my name is Daniel Gamboa, and I am currently the chief executive of the New Zealand National Refugee Youth Council. This is an NGO by refugee youth for refugee youth. We are actually the only NGO in New Zealand that is entirely run and operated by former refugee youth for former refugee youth. So it's a huge achievement. And this is why I want to talk to you about refugee meaningful participation and tell you a little bit about my journey. The Refugee Youth Council advocates, empowers, and engages refugee background youth in New Zealand so they can have a meaningful and a successful life here in this in their new country. So, look, let's get started, eh? Shall we?
Yeah, let's get started. And thank you so much for sharing this information about what you're up to and the organization that you're leading. Thank you so much. Now I would like to actually ask you about your journey as a refugee. Could you please share with us a brief overview of your journey as a refugee from Colombia to where you are today?
Yes, of course. It's always difficult to share your journey, but today I want to acknowledge that it's my mom's journey. I was really young, and I really want to acknowledge my mother and how powerful she was and what a warrior she was to bring me to safety. I was born in Colombia, and some of you may have visited Colombia in the past. It's a beautiful country, full of color, dance, and good food. Unfortunately, Colombia suffers from a high level of violence and conflict. We have been in a civil war for the last 50 years. Government, guerrilla, and rebel groups have been fighting to get into power. This means that a lot of people are forced to leave their homes and escape into safety. Colombia has one of the highest numbers of internally displaced people in the world. And we don't really usually hear about Colombia in the news. So this is why I'm really excited about my story. I grew up having everything. I don't remember ever complaining about my life. My mom was always there for me. My father left my mom and I when I was 6 years old. And that was a bit tough. But my mom was always there. My grandma, this woman, always there supporting me growing up.
Unfortunately, when I went to school, I started seeing things in a different way. And when I was around 10 years old, I remember the local rebel group would come to my school, and they will take all the children outside. They will line us up, and they will start choosing young boys to recruit them as child soldiers, and girls and to recruit them into sex slavery. I was never too tall or big enough to be taken away, but I do remember parents the next day crying for their children, and they wouldn't know where their children were. My mom, on the other hand, she had a restaurant and she worked really hard, and she had to pay protection money to be able to stay open. This protection money was a weekly payment that she had to do to the rebel groups. One day they came into the restaurant and asked her to store some weapons. She didn't want to help, so she refused. They threatened her with my life because they knew where I went to school. She was really afraid, and she decided it was the time for us to leave our country. It was not safe enough. So she took everything she could, ran away, went to my school, took me away from the school and said, "We need to go." The same night, we left everything behind and went to Ecuador. We went on a bus for 30 hours from Bogota to the border of Ecuador. We crossed the border and became refugees. We didn't really know what a refugee was, but we knew that to be able to stay in Ecuador, we needed to be a refugee. And I remember always complaining to my mother, telling her, "Look, I didn't know why you're doing this to me. Why did I have to leave my friends and my family?" She said, "One day you will understand." And of course, now I do. Now I understand. My life in Ecuador was really tough. Ecuador is also a beautiful country, and there are our neighbors. But at that time, lots of Colombians were going to Ecuador. So there was a lot of racism and a lot of xenophobia that Colombians faced. And so at 12 years old, facing that and being bullied by your classmates because you were Colombian, because you had a different accent, was really tough. My mom couldn't find a job, and we went from shelter to shelter, living in churches, until one day, the UNHCR, United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, asked my mom if we would like to go to a resettlement country. My mom wasn't too sure, but she said anything is better than Ecuador or Colombia. And they said, "Okay, we'll send your file to a different, to a resettlement country, and they will see if they want to accept you." Weeks later, they said New Zealand is interested in your case. We didn't know anything about New Zealand or even where it was. We thought it was Europe. But they said, "Look, take it or leave it." And we said, my mom said yes. We had an interview with the New Zealand delegation, immigration offices in Ecuador. And they said, "Look, it's going to take a long time if you ever get accepted." And they said maybe 2 to 4 years. My mom didn't have anything, and it was really tough. But my mom, I remember my mom telling them, "Please don't forget about us." And a month later, we heard back from Immigration New Zealand, from them, and they said, "Hey, good news, you have been accepted to go to New Zealand. You travel in 1 week." So we had to pack everything and say goodbyes again without knowing this new country. And a lot of people started saying, "Hey, it might be human trafficking. It sounds too nice to be true." So that was scary. But we decided, look, we want to go into this journey. It was the first time for us on a plane. And in June 2012, we arrived into New Zealand. That was really tough. It was winter. It was cold. I will always remember that day because my mom turned to me and said, "Maybe we made a mistake." And I said to her, "Look, We traveled across the ocean and we're going to give it a go. We're into safety. And I remember breathing the fresh air of New Zealand. And since then, obviously, it's been really tough. There's lots of trauma that comes with being a refugee and trying to adapt in a new culture, learn a new language, because we didn't know a single word of English. But here we are. I'm really passionate to give back, to support my refugee community. And now it's been 12 years since we arrived in Aotearoa, New Zealand. So what a journey it's been, and I'm really pleased to share that with everyone, for them to know what it means to be a refugee. It's not an easy journey, and it never ends. It's an ongoing journey.
Thank you, Daniel. It's definitely not an easy journey. And I can tell that it's a story of resilience and at the same time of hope. Thank you so much for sharing this, for going back 12 years and bringing us to where you are today, that is New Zealand. You also mentioned that it's not easy. You face a lot of challenges in terms of communicating with other people. There's another language. There's another cultural aspects that you don't know. I would like to delve into these last parts that you mentioned. As someone like you that has personally experienced the journey of a refugee, could you shed light on the major challenges that refugees often encounter in terms of inclusion?
Thank you so much for that question. You know, I think it's a really important question. People sometimes don't really understand the issues that refugees face. On the top of the list, I think it's discrimination and xenophobia. A lot of us are put into the box of, oh, you're a refugee. You don't know anything. You don't have education. They don't see us beyond the label of refugee. A lot of countries think that we come into their country to steal their jobs, their benefits, and that's really tough. And I think refugees bring so much with them, as we were saying. Being a refugee gives you resilience, adaptability, and if we could use those to support the economy of the new country, that would be great. But those barriers don't let us. There's access to education. A lot of our refugee children across the world don't access education. They're forced to learn from home. They don't have resources. They don't have the legal documents. So there's lots of social isolation as well. A lot of our refugees find it really hard to adapt into the new culture. They're excluded from the mainstream. So that's a lot of psychological issues that brings. Being away from your family, having all the post-traumatic trauma coming back to you, it's really challenging. And having all those issues without being able to access support, it's very challenging. And in countries, we see that refugees can access that support because they're not legal. But once they're legal and they can access the support, the people who are giving the support are not equipped, and they're not educated to be able to deal with the traumas that our refugee communities face. So yeah, I think that's a couple of them.
Sorry, Daniel. Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I obviously, you know, seeing it from a different perspective, I'm not a refugee, but I can tell that from your own story and from what we can witness, even on TV, even in the news, even in reading, even in articles, it is possible to see that there is an issue in terms of inclusion. There is isolation, as you very well mentioned. And here is where I think it is very important to talk about meaningful refugee participation and the impact that meaningful refugee participation has, not only on the refugees themselves, but in the societies in which they are living. So before we move on and talk about all these benefits, I think first it is important to define what meaningful refugee participation means. The Global Compact on Refugees acknowledges that meaningful refugee engagement is crucial for creating effective policies for refugees and for sustainable policies that are for everyone. So So could you please delve into the definition of meaningful refugee participation and why is it important?
Yes, of course. Look, meaningful refugee, let's start with the definition. Meaningful refugee participation refers to involving refugee directly into the decision-making process and the activities that affect their everyday lives and well-being. It recognizes that refugees are active stakeholders and they can bring value to decision-making. Just imagine, and we see this every day, and look, it's 2023 and we shouldn't be advocating for refugee meaningful participation, but we have to. And we in a conference, in a consultation where we're talking about the issue that matters, we need to have the people that faces the issue there. If we're having a conference about women, we need women panelists. If we have a conference about people from the LGBTQ plus community, we need them to be telling us. But it actually, you will be surprised, it hardly happens for refugees. We have decision makers who have never been refugees, who don't know what it is to be a refugee, yet they make decisions for us without us. So having meaningful refugee participation will mean that our refugee community can be active leaders in their own lives, and they can inform policies, tailor solutions, and be empowered to make decisions and support their own community by them, for them.
Definitely. I think I would rescue what you mentioned, which is it's similar to the idea of nothing about us without us. And it is something very important because, as you pretty well explained, you know, as a refugee, you have a viewpoint that it's very hard to have in other instances. I can understand what you're going through, but I will never fully, completely understand it the way that you or other refugees do. So I just wanted to delve into that. And I also wanted to highlight something important that you mentioned, is that refugees need to participate, right? They need to be prepared to participate in fora, to participate in other processes. But this is not easy. Participating in international negotiations or participating in local government reunions, even, it can be hard, even for people with a lot of experience in government. So how is it that refugees can be prepared and empowered to participate?
Thank you. Look, I think decision makers need to be willing to involve refugees. I think most often we see that refugees come into the decision-making table at the end of a policy, just as a tick box exercise, where they said, hey, we did consult it with refugees. But in reality, they just told us the policy and that was it. They never involved us. So I think decision-makers, policy-makers need to be aware that we have the rights and we have the capacity to be involved and participate. So look, I think there are a couple of things that can be done. First of all, I think refugees need to know their rights. They need to know information. So if there is a conference around the world, if policymakers are meeting, refugees should know. So that's the first thing. We are really passionate about this, but many of us don't have the experience. We don't have the knowledge, the legal knowledge. So in order for us to participate, we should be empowered. We should be given mentoring. We should be given education and build our confidence and capacity. I think there's lots more than can be done. There's lots of consultations are usually very Western and they don't take into account who we are as refugees. So it needs to be very inclusive. They need to do something to be cultural sensitive and help us participate. Money is a big thing. And we do a lot of this for free. So if decision makers, if those big policy people empower us with money and with the capacity, with knowledge, money and means to be able to participate, we will participate. And also acknowledge that we are helping you, acknowledge that and recognize us.
No, thank you so much for sharing. I think I would delve into knowledge, you know, the last point you emphasized on, because it is very hard to, you know, advocate or lead a change or protect your cause if you don't know your rights. And it is important. It's something that fortunately can start with technology. It is possible to consult existing conventions that protect refugees, as well as for example, the one that I previously mentioned, the 2018 Global Compact for Refugees, as well as human rights, of course. So thank you so much for sharing this. It is a way in which young and other refugees can be empowered. And for anyone that is listening, whether it is a young changemaker or it is somebody working in government interested in fostering inclusive participation and meaningful participation, this is a very easy way to begin. So now I would like to move on into refugee participation initiatives, because they can take various forms. Which are the existing models for participation?
Yeah, I think the main one and the one the policymakers should be supporting, it's refugee-led initiatives. I think we should be empowering refugees to lead their own development. And we have seen amazing refugee-led organizations, also called RLOs. And they are the ones who are actually making a lot of change and actioning a lot of change in the ground, because they know refugees really well, because they themselves are refugees. And they are great advocates as well. But in many occasions, they're under-resourced. They don't have capacity. They don't have capability. And a lot of decision makers just give them work, just as a tick box exercise, and then they don't support them. So that's a big one that I will advocate for government departments and agencies to support refugee-led organizations. And I think another one that works really well, it's a partnership and a co-design model. Don't bring refugees at the end or just the beginning stage of a policy-making process. Partner with them. And this needs to be a meaningful partnership where they can have an active role and an active decision-making, where refugees can say, look, this is wrong, this is right. Give them enough time. Many agencies just say, come to us or refugees and say, hey, we're developing this policy. We got 1 week for your comments. No, this is a long term. And with that as well, we need a long term focus from the organization. The organization needs to tell us, this is the beginning, this is the middle, this is the end, and this is the outcome. Many times we refugees participate in the first stages and we never see the outcome. We never hear it from them back again. So we don't know how our voices helped to shape the policies. We have also seen the rise of refugee advisory groups across the world, where government departments have a refugee advisory group made of former refugees or refugees advising the government in different policies. That can also be a really good idea, but it's also That can also be a good idea, but it can also be limiting. So don't only rely on the advisory group. You also need to go down to the grassroots level. Because in many cases, those advisory groups are paid by government. So some of the people sitting there, those power dynamics, don't let the people tell government exactly what the issues are. So I think you need to go that higher up level, and also low to the ground, talking to the community.
Definitely, Daniel. Thank you so much for sharing this. I think it is a perfect answer, because it goes like from as you very well mentioned from the top, but at the same time, grassroots engagement is crucial. And I would also like to delve into an important concept that even if you didn't name it itself, you described it, which is tokenism. And you said, for having meaningful participation and a model of meaningful participation of refugees, we cannot just have them in the end and say like, oh yeah, I included them, right? Like very last minute and saying, yeah, they were here, they were refugees. That is a practice that is not right. And for anyone in the audience that is not familiar with tokenism, what it stands for is basically the practice of including a minority group or an important collective, like in this case, refugees, but only in a symbolic and in a superficial way. That is exactly what we are not advocating for. And that is something that we need to move away from, because even if it's good to say, okay, there's a refugee that was consulted or that was invited, it needs to go way beyond that. As you well mentioned, it needs to go as well to a grassroots level and to a deeper level. So again, thank you so much for bringing that into this conversation. Just wanted to emphasize that point since we're going to keep talking about ways to avoid tokenism. But before we do that, you also mentioned about some global processes that exist for meaningful refugee participation. And you mentioned that there's some that exist, but you consider that this forum can be a little bit Western. So I want to hear your opinion on, first, what are the existing global processes that you know for refugees' participation? And what can be changed for them to not be very Western and be more inclusive?
I think we're doing better. And globally, there has been a rise of these initiatives. And this is because us, as refugees, have seen the inequalities, have seen the issues, and we have said enough is enough. If you don't act, we need to act. So we refugees have been knocking at the door of decision makers and have said, hey, you need to include us. We need to go. If you're not going to pay for my flight to go to this conference, give me the invite and I will raise the funds myself. So we've seen a wonderful refugee leaders taking onto this global stage and have forced organizations, global organizations, to include us and have fora for, especially for refugees. I remember a couple of years ago, it could be probably 8 years ago, I was invited. I was really like forced myself to be invited to one of these global conferences in Geneva, where we were talking about refugees, where decisions were made, where long-term decisions were made about our well-being. And out of 350 participants, there was only 5 of us of refugee background. So, and to them, that was a big step to have refugees there, but that's not good enough, and we need to see more refugees in those decision making tables. There's lots of forums that we can see are happening, and there's the Global Refugee Forum that was organized by the UNHCR a couple of years ago, but still we see a lot of people that can't get visas because these forums are done in Europe, in Geneva, in Switzerland, you know? So we need to be taking these forums to the community, to Asia, to Africa, where participants are there in the ground, accessing to them. And also we need to make clear to the participants how their voices are being heard and how their voices are shaping policy. If you, as a participant, don't see how your voice is making a change, then you get discouraged. Then you don't go back next year, you know? And we've seen that a lot. We've seen a lot of burnout actually as well, where you send a refugee there to the global stage and they go there so passionate, so willing to share their knowledge, and they come back burnt out, disappointed because they weren't listened to. There were lots of power dynamics because the people in that high positions were in a sense discriminatory to them, and we see people, yeah, especially young people coming back and losing that trust in those agencies. So I think agencies need to also do a better job at building trust with us.
Thank you so much for sharing this. It is very important to, as you pretty well mentioned, to build trust and to go to different places and be able to include refugees themselves in these kind of processes. Something that I'm also very glad to know is that I've been reading that there's been some fora which try to go to different places. There's summits that take place in Latin America, in Asia, and in other parts of the world, like the MENA region and Africa, and that it's led by the Global Refugee-Led Network. So I think this is a sort of initiatives that we need to push. We need to push for inclusive participation, that it's not only destined to be in one place that is not very accessible for the majority of refugees around the world. So thank you again for emphasizing this point. And these points that you have brought in this conversation are shared by many other people and many other activists in terms of refugee rights and refugee meaningful participation. And as I just mentioned, the Global Refugee-Led Network and other nonprofits have in fact highlighted that the refugee response sector is struggling to achieve meaningful participation. So they have recognized it already. And with this, and considering what you said as well, what recommendations would you provide to stakeholders to overcome the challenges and to avoid tokenism or other harmful institutional dynamics that create additional barriers to meaningful refugee participation?
Thank you for that question. And I also want to acknowledge all the amazing work that it's going on around the world, especially by the Refugee-Led Network, which have been pushing, advocating at a global level as well. So really appreciate their work, and we send them greetings if they're listening to our podcast. Look, I think there are a couple of things that governments and organizations could do to improve this. And look, first, they need to be committed to inclusion, and that needs to be genuine. So they need to be involving refugees at all levels instead of just participants into decision making. They also need to promote inclusivity, especially for the minority groups within refugees. I think we need to acknowledge that refugees are complex. It's a complex community, and there are layers of different complexities. And we have minorities within minorities. So we have women, we have LGBTQ+ within our refugee community, and these communities are usually marginalized, and nothing is done to protect them, to allow them to participate into this fora. They need to show us the how our voices are going to be impactful, and it needs to be to avoid tokenism. So it needs to be us. We need to be involved in the whole journey. So not just a short-term, but a long-term engagement. We need to address power imbalances. So they need to be aware that there are a lot of power dynamics involved in decision-making, and that they need to bring us as equal partners, not participants, not refugees, but we just need to be the equal partners. And they also need to have a feedback loop. And they need to come back to us and tell us how our voices help them, what policy changes they have made after our feedback. So there needs to be transparency and accountability. And I'm also really keen for them to explore other platforms of participation. Earlier, you mentioned technology. I think technology would be a great tool to use, especially for those refugees who cannot travel overseas, so they're stuck in a particular place, but they're also willing to have a say. And finally, I want them to invest in our local leadership.
I couldn't agree more, and thank you so much for sharing all these recommendations. I'm pretty sure they are very helpful for everyone that is listening to us, and I'm also very glad to know that you are very punctual. You're saying we need this, we need money, we need to invest in leadership. So it's actually a path that is very clear. It's not very hard to achieve meaningful participation when you consider that there is a path to get there. And it might not be something that you can do overnight, but if you follow these steps as well as many other recommendations that I'm pretty sure that have already been mentioned in these summits or in these conferences, then I'm pretty sure we can achieve that desired change. So thank you again for highlighting them. And we have already talked about the challenges. We have already heard about your recommendations. But I'm also very interested about the positive change that meaningful refugee participation has for the broader society. Maybe for people that are listening to us and are not refugees, they're curious, how is it that having meaningful refugee participation can have an impact on me or can have an impact on the society where I'm living in? What is your opinion about this?
Yes, most definitely. I think there are lots of positive outcomes of refugee meaningful participation. One is enhancing social cohesion. So if we involve refugees in community activities, workshops, we empower them to participate, we allow them to create social interactions, we allow them to participate with the host communities, and also create opportunities for discussions and getting rid of the labels of host communities, see refugees actively participating in decision-making, and they see them in mainstream. This help reduce stereotypes, you know, and the tensions, and we will see social cohesion in the communities. It also helps break down barriers of economic contribution. If we employ refugees as consultants, as workshop facilitators, as cultural facilitators, because they know their issues the best, we are contributing to the economy of their own country and building their skills. And so I think there's a big potential there. I think overall, it will just get rid of those stereotypes that we carry with us. And our refugees will be able to settle in, fully participate, advocate for themselves, advocate for wider issues in their communities, and be active citizens of their own country. So please, if you're listening here, you will benefit, we will benefit, and overall, the whole country will benefit if we are involved in decision making.
That is a brilliant answer. I think I would like to emphasize some points, to leave it clear in this podcast episode. It's about innovation. It's about also what is fair. You know, I think everyone deserves an opportunity to participate and to contribute, specifically when it's issues related to them that they know well. But as you very well mentioned, innovation, social cohesion, and changing perspectives and narratives that can be very harmful to refugees. You know, I think it's very important to bring that to the conversation. So thank you so, so much, Daniel. And unfortunately, we are in the last part of this episode. We have already given some general recommendations, but now I would like to delve into recommendations directed to specific groups and to specific people that are listening to us. So first, I would like to start with youth in general. Young people are one of the main listeners to this podcast. As it is named the Young Changemakers Podcast, we have many changemakers and many young people that are willing to start making a change. So what is the role that young people have in promoting diversity, inclusion, and advocating for refugees' rights?
Well, I think young people are great changemakers. They have lots of power to to action change. And if you are a young leader listening to us, I want you to take everything I mentioned before and take it to your local government, to your local council, to your local government department, and raise awareness of the issues we mentioned before. There's a global refugees and forced migration. It's a global issue that affects all of us, not only the people where refugees come from, not only those countries, but also us as well. So look, take those issues, raise awareness, dispel the stereotypes. I want you to amplify the voices of refugees as well. So if you know a refugee, if you know a local young person who has a refugee background, support them. Give them skills, empower them, work alongside them as well. And I think there's lots of platforms that can also be used to advocate and lobbying. And there's great campaigns around the world where you can campaign to your local government so they can accept more refugees, that they can open their borders, that they can see we bring so much to the country. We're not a burden. We will bring so much to your country if you accept us to come in and you give us safety. So if you are able to tell them that. And I'm pretty sure in your local school, there will be someone who is a refugee, who has experienced a refugee journey. Reach out to them. They might feel isolated. They might not know how the local things work. Reach out to them. Be friends. Look, I think there are many things our young people can do globally, locally. I want them to know that if they can take one thing from here, will be to just find out. I don't want them to be the voice of the voiceless, right? So I don't want them to be the voice of the refugees. I want them to find out the refugee community and empower that community to have their own voice.
Thank you so much for this, Daniel. Again, it's a brilliant answer and brilliant recommendations for everyone that is listening to us that is not a refugee but would love to contribute to this, to make it much more fair, to make it more inclusive and meaningful. So thank you so much. As me, myself, someone that is not a refugee, I'm also taking notes. So thank you so much. And now I would love to hear your advice for young refugees. I think there's refugees that could be listening to us right now, could be listening to this conversation, and they might look at your story. How is it that you have also been involved in many of these consultations? How is it that you are part of an organization working for refugees? And they might wonder, how did you get there? What advice would you give to them to become advocates and to become leaders?
Yes, I think the main thing I would say to a young refugee is leverage your story and your journey. Don't focus on the negative aspects of being a refugee. Focus on the positives and focus on what being a refugee means to you. As I said earlier in the podcast, we're resilient, we're adaptable, we have so many unique skills. So focus on those skills and use them for the purpose of advocating. I think we have powerful stories. So use that power of your story to advocate for yourself and for others. I want you to know what you stand for. I want you to know the passion that you've got. So you focus on that. If you have an opportunity, advocate with decision makers. Don't be afraid to engage with them, to write a letter to your local government, to government representative, asking them, what are you doing for us? What are you doing for refugees? Put yourself out there. I also think that if you get the opportunity to educate yourself around global issues, around your own issues as a refugee, I think that's really powerful, because many decision makers put us on a box of, oh, you're a refugee, you don't know anything, so we'll make decisions for you. But if you educate yourself and show them and demand for your rights, I think that's really powerful. Obviously, this is a long journey, so I'll encourage you to make friends, find people in a community that face the same issues as you have. In my case, I started looking around the whole country, New Zealand, what other young people like me were doing. And I found out that they were facing the same issues that I was facing. So we got together and decided, hey, why don't we actually create our own NGO by us, for us, by refugee youth, for refugee youth. I could have never done that by myself. I was passionate, but this is hard work. So if you're surrounded by people who have experienced the same experiences you have and understand, that would be an amazing thing. So look, stay resilient. You're already very resilient. Be patient and persistent. Keep asking and knocking at different doors.
Definitely. Keep asking, keep knocking on different doors. And now this is the last question, the last piece of advice. Definitely not the least important, but I would love to close the episode with this question that I have for you and this set of recommendations that you will provide. What message would you like to convey to policymakers who have the power to shape policies and decisions impacting the lives of refugees globally?
Be willing to listen to refugees themselves. Acknowledge that you don't know every single thing. Be inclusive. Make sure minorities within the refugee communities can access information and access opportunities to contribute. Be aware that protection and safety is a human right. So protect us when we refugees need it. Be flexible and adaptable as well. We are not, don't put us in one size fits all solution. Think outside the box to address global issues. And ultimately, if you listen to the podcast and you're here, I think you're making a huge change. So I really want to congratulate you for being an active listener. I want you to take everything you learn here from us. And the main thing is just partner with us. Have us as equal partners and in decision making.
Thank you, Daniel. These are wonderful recommendations. As I highlighted in the beginning, these were recommendations for different people, for young people, for change makers, for people that want to make a change and haven't started yet, for refugees, and now for policymakers as well. So thank you so much for sharing your story, for sharing your insights, and for sharing your recommendations. It was a real honor to have you here in the Young Changemakers podcast. Thank you very much, Daniel.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.